Okay, we are live on a Wednesday morning. It's already the 10th of July.
Yep.
Yes, before you know it. Listen, I always say when August comes along, forget about it. If you have ideas and plans and schemes to take over the world and you haven't put them into play by August, it's not going to happen.
Mm-mm.
Because there's this like serious acceleration to the end of the year after that. Forget about it.
It flies.
And I'll tell you something else. It's like, it's really hard to get people motivated in the cold. Getting people to do anything, like meetings and things. Yes. Yesterday, I had nonstop meetings all day, but they were all online, mm-hmm. so it was fine. Mm-hmm. So I sat at home, made sure I was nice and warm. If the camera was on, then they would see like I looked respectable from here up. But there were blankets. and there was like, I think I drank a lot of tea.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was like hot water bottles and shit going on. It was fantastic. If I could do days like that, I can be productive.
Yeah.
As long as you're warm. It's amazing how much you can get done. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you spend the whole day at the office just trying to keep warm. I mean, that office that you're at is freezing.
It is freezing.
And then people sit there and they're basically just shivering and they spend all of their mental and physical energy just trying to get hot.
Stay warm, yeah.
You know, get away from the cold. So nothing productive is done.
Yeah, well, I sit with the heater right in front of my desk at the office.
What kind of heater? Because you get, I mean, like there's the oil ones, which are terrible.
Those fan heaters.
The fan heaters. But they dry you out like a prune.
That's the problem. So okay. I have to switch it on and off and alternate during the day. But I mean, I've found a little bit of a rhythm. So I'm okay now. I'm doing a lot better.
I remember we spoke to an energy expert once and he said that the best ones are actually the air conditioner,
mm-hmm.
but you put it on heat.
Yeah.
From an energy use point of view.
That's the best option.
Energy conservation, yeah. So that's apparently the best one to use. But I don't know. I mean, I was away this weekend and we survived by making fires. Just lots and lots of fires.
Like old school.
Yeah. Mm. And that felt kind of good.
Yeah.
But jeez, we burned through a lot of wood.
Do you know what? I've got no problem with fires. It's just the moment you step away, the smell of smoke is all over your body.
Please, man. You smell like you've been at an outdoor like braai or party or shebeen or something. But you know those braziers that like the homeless people in town gather around?
They've got one
of those rubbish bins with holes in it,
mm-hmm.
right? And they put the coals and the wood in there.
It'll
stand like there, like this over there. Those things work like a charm.
Yeah, it's called an mbaula.
Mbaula.
Mm-hmm.
But you smell.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, you're going to smell pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's going to be bad. If you are planning on going on a date, I choose another day, bro.
It's worse than garlic.
Yeah.
And you smell your clothes afterwards, like the next day. If you're stupid enough to get into bed without like having a shower before you get into bed, then your bed smells like that too, and ish.
That's just a bad idea.
It's tough in South Africa. It's really tough. All right. So speaking of South Africa, apparently International Relations Minister Ronald Lamola said he's already discussed Ireland's new visa regulations for South Africans with his Home Affairs counterpart, Leon Schreiber. So there's already proof that the ANC and the DA are working together.
Mm.
But the Irish, it's funny, like this happened just after the rugby, right? That's what everybody's saying. Apparently, the Irish Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, announced that nationals traveling from South Africa and Botswana would no longer have visa-free entry into that country. She said the amendment would align Ireland with the Schengen area and the UK's visa requirements. We've been able to go to Ireland for years. And as far as I know, there aren't any incidents that South Africans have been involved in. You know, you normally go, oh, okay, someone's embarrassed us.
Mm.
But as far as I know, nothing's happened. But now you have to go and pay between 1,200 and 2,000 Rand for an Irish visa.
What happened?
Our producer,
James. Yes.
No, Ryan, who was here before. No. Ryan just got in the nick of time.
Like just by the skin of his teeth. Just.
Yeah, we were meant to catch up with him the other day, but we couldn't connect properly. And we'll try that again at some point, find out how he's doing.
But I wonder what caused this entire change to
That's what
begin
I'm wondering.
With.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Why suddenly decide, okay, we're going to now impose a visa on these people?
It's very strange.
Did someone do something?
So a friend of mine was in Ireland, I think, earlier on this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me how there are a bunch of different nationalities in Ireland that you wouldn't expect. So he says he would go out to these clubs and whatnot and bump into a whole host of Brazilian women.
Nice.
Right?
Sounds like a good reason to go to Ireland.
And I was like, maybe I need to buy that ticket. I need to buy that ticket. But honestly, I don't think I'd enjoy the weather. I've heard not so great things about Ireland's weather. It's something you can do without, seemingly.
Apparently, according to the Minister of Sport, Gaetan McKenzie, speaking of ministers, the majority of South Africans are super fans. That's what he tweeted just 47 minutes ago. So he's probably going to be looking to give ordinary South Africans an experience of being super fans like Mama Joy and the rest of them.
Yeah, maybe they should rotate. You know what I mean? Find one here, find another one there. All alike, make it a bit of a raffle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get all of us involved. Let's see what happens if, you know, you win the ticket and you get to go watch the Springboks or whatever the case may be. That'd be cool. I think that'd be cool.
So I don't know if you got caught up in any of this online, but apparently Novak Djokovic was booed at Wimbledon, and he wasn't taking it.
Mm.
After the match yesterday, I'm not sure what stage of Wimbledon they're at. I don't know if this weekend coming is the finals. I'm not sure. But Novak Djokovic was booed. They tried to disguise it by saying, no, people were shouting for Casper Ruud, who's the other guy. He was like, no. He says, I've been doing this 25 years. I'm not an idiot. I can hear when people are booing me. He's like, it's fine. I'm still the best.
Mm.
You guys are just losers. And he wasn't taking it. And apparently the BBC has trying to the BBC is trying to provoke him and say he should apologize for calling people out for booing him. And he's like, no, not interested.
Why would they boo him in the first place? I don't understand.
I don't understand.
I remember, well, with the whole COVID thing, he didn't want to take the shot. And I was fully behind him on that.
Absolutely. But,
like, after that, yeah. I really don't understand why anyone would be mad at him. Like, Novak Djokovic?
I don't know if it had anything to do with that at all. I think people are...
I remember him making, like, being, you know, what happens at these
tennis matches, and it's especially prevalent in France because the French are always so otherwise. But they love the underdog.
Yeah.
And Djokovic has been such a feature of the tennis landscape for such a long time that people also just kind of, you know, they're spoiled. They're sick of him. So it's easy to boo him. Maybe that's part of it. He wasn't taking any of it, though, which I think is great. You know, most people try to please the crowd.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, thanks, guys. You know, I'm sure you weren't booing me. He's like, fuck you.
Yeah, as he should.
You know how good I am?
Yeah.
Half of you are only here because I'm playing.
And if it's jealousy, I wish him 2-3 more years of health and wealth.
Exactly. Like,
keep whipping the ass. I'm a massive Nadal fan, but I'm not going to boo Djokovic just because he's still playing at a high level.
Right.
Get over yourself, you child.
Tato says he actually acknowledged all of the calm supporters there for the sport.
That is great.
It was the quarterfinals, according to Carl. This weekend is the final. Djokovic is the best tennis player ever.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lot of people think. And Raven says, was he being a doer? I don't know, but I don't think it's always a good idea to try and please the crowd. Like, if the crowd is booing you, sometimes the crowd doesn't know what the hell it's doing.
Yep.
Sometimes the crowd is just filled with idiots who are doing what everyone else in the crowd thinks they should do. And they just go along with it. It's like if you see a whole bunch of people running in a certain direction, do you run with them? Or do you go and see what they're running from?
Yeah.
Do you just join in a crowd when they're on their way to, I don't know, kill Marie Antoinette? Or do you decide, no, I'm going to actually stay here. I'm not getting involved in this.
I think the more apt example for South Africans is, do you see a queue and immediately just stand in it?
Yeah, you just join the queue.
You just join
the queue. I know people who would do that, right?
It shocks me. It shocks me so much. Just a line of people and you just join. You've got no idea what's going on. You just stand there.
Sanella's in the comments says, losers generally aren't happy with winners. He wins all the time. Yeah. Losers will never be happy with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. I think that's true.
Yeah, and get better. And they just get better.
And there are going to always be more losers than winners. So when losers are confronted with a winner, they usually try to tear them down so that they can raise themselves up.
Mm.
Of course, it doesn't work that way because crabs in the bucket, right?
Yeah.
They just keep pulling the other crabs back in and then no one escapes from the bucket. And also the tall poppy syndrome, which is a serious problem in very many parts of the world. As soon as someone does well, it can't be that they actually did well or that they worked hard or that they sacrificed a whole lot of stuff or that they just got lucky. It has to be that they did it at your expense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love the way people who've done nothing in their lives will go and say, oh, Djokovic, he keeps winning. It's so unfair. If only he wasn't playing, I would be the world champion. You're like, no, you wouldn't. You're fat and you watch tennis from home.
Exactly. Even if the top 200 tennis players on the planet were to just retire.
If the top 1,000,
yeah,
you still wouldn't make it, whoever you are.
Make it.
I love that. Oh, man. In the wise words of Bobby Boucher, says Tracy Bard, if you ain't first, you're last. That's
yes,
from
sir.
Talladega Nights. I love it. I also think, you know, there are loads of sports where people feel like participating is the important thing.
No, it's not.
Even board games. Over this weekend, as I said, I went away with some friends and we played 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I take 30 seconds extremely seriously.
Yeah, same here.
I will choose whoever I think is the smartest person to be my teammate.
I've ended relationships because of...
You've ended relationships?
Yes. Yeah.
Hold on. Pause to explain.
Seriously. Like, I'll meet a young lady, will, you know, get along for a couple of weeks. And if we chill with my friends and we play 30 seconds, you embarrass myself. If you've embarrassed me, excuse me, you out of it. You listen.
Wow, you'll
you
break
are
up.
Out of it.
Sure. Okay, then you're a step further than I thought. I was bad because I don't really have a sense of humor about it. Like if it's not going my way, I'm like, oh, no, don't want to play this game anymore. If someone is messing around, they're not taking it seriously. I'm like, concentrate. I've got some winning to do.
Think about it, though.
You sound even worse.
Seriously, though. Like, that game, when you think about it, it shows you a lot about the people you're around.
Yeah.
How do they handle pressure?
Yeah.
Do they have BMT? You know what I mean? Big
right.
match temperament.
You actually like, do a complete assessment
yes,
of them.
Yes. I need to see if shit hits the fan and I need you to get some information to me really quickly and you can't and you fail. Like, listen, you're out of there. You are out of there. Gone. And you're not going to embarrass me in front of people. Hell no.
We tried playing Cards Against Humanity, but the one guy who was there was just not interested. He's like, there's no way to win this game. So what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there is supposedly a way to win. Like you come up with the most funny or offensive answer. But actually, he said that that's too arbitrary. And he wants to actually account for winning. That's why we went on to 30 seconds, which I like.
Yeah.
Azalea says 30 seconds in Trivial Pursuit are actually the best. They're the litmus test for relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Like you, she would agree with you.
Yeah. It's no joke.
Okay. Gareth would probably psych me out and I'd forget the most obvious things, says that Don Kitty. Uno. Uno's great. My sister's boyfriend taught the nephews to play a game called Where Uno.
Okay, what's
and
that?
Where Uno is where you, if you get like a +4, +7, mm-hmm. you hand it on to people and then they end up with a pile of cards like this. You go, where? Which teaches kids at a young age that life is unfair.
Yeah.
And you've just got to make the most of it, right?
Yeah, you have to.
And if you complain and you moan, then where? You're pathetic. You're just a loser.
Mm.
So just deal with it.
Yeah.
And now they only want to play Where Uno. They don't just want to play Uno. But they want to be able to go, wah, when they've like labored you with a whole pile of cards.
That's actually a cool way to teach a lesson.
I think so too, right?
That's dope.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Carl says, my wife lets me play 30 seconds every weekend. She used to call it my 2-minute noodle, but now we have kids, so time is scarce. I don't think we're playing the same game here.
Yeah, I don't think
cards
so.
Cards Against Humanity is brutal, and the South African version is wild. Is there a South African version?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, man. It's so great. Some of those things are just absolutely abominable, right? I want to meet the people who came up with this game. I think it's great. It's just very, very funny.
Yeah.
Monopoly is good, says Gray. It would also be good to teach people how money works.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, that's what a lot of kids' first introduction to economics is through Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
You can also be cruel in Monopoly, though. Put up hotels and houses on every street, mm-hmm. making it really difficult for people to just go around the board.
Yeah.
That's how you learn how, like, everything's stacked against the poor, right?
It's if you want, I think Monopoly is such a cool illustration of how life can play out. The only difference is when you start the game, everyone starts on the same footing,
yeah.
which is not how life actually works.
No, exactly.
But I like the fact that as the game continues, you kind of discriminate between who's smart and who isn't.
And the 80-20 rule comes into play immediately,
yes, it
right?
does.
The
yes,
Matthew
it does.
Principle. Like, by the end of the game, 20% of the players have 80% of the wealth.
Yeah.
That just shows you that it's not like, you know, this is unfair. Where?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, that's how it works.
That's
it's
how
like,
it works.
That's how economics happens. It's like, you're going to end up with most of the wealth in a certain part of the board.
Mm.
And those people will own everything. And
exactly.
Sometimes it's a little bit of luck, but it's also a little bit of brains. It's all you need to know. Monopoly also teaches you about theft and taxes, says Bitcoin Boots. Yeah. The worst is landing on that. Go to jail. Do not pay 200 Rand. Do not pass go.
Do not pass go.
And then, just go to jail. So unfair.
And then you have to pull out that get out of free jail card under your leg there.
Yeah.
Because you don't want everyone to know that you've got it.
Get out
you
of jail free card.
You're like, Ella.
I love it. That Don Kiddies' says Pictionary is fun too. You know what? There's some really cool games. I think that the classic ones are still the best though.
Yeah. Without
Monopoly,
a shadow of a doubt.
Monopoly, 30 Seconds, Trivial Pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
These are the games that I think everybody loves. And you have to, the one I won't play with people I care about is Risk, because I get I get so competitive. I like, I remember turning over a table on my brother at like age 12. I was like, he was frustrating the hell out of me. If you've never played Risk before, like it's about taking over the world, right?
Yeah.
I take that very personally. So, he was doing this thing where he was holed up in Australia. You can only attack Australia through one place,
yeah.
right? Indonesia. And he had so many men stationed there.
Yeah.
It was just taking forever. I owned the rest of the world, but it was taking forever. He was basically doing a Stalingrad. Oh, I got so frustrated. I eventually just turned the table over. I was like, get out of here. He's never played with me since.
I would never play with you either. If you're flipping tables and stuff, I swear I would have gone up like, Gareth, it's not that serious.
It is. Says the guy who breaks up with girls over 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah. Look, man, I'm not violent, at least. Like, you flipping tables. I'm breaking up with people.
Dude.
I'm just saying.
Breaking up with people is a pretty severe penalty for them getting a 30 seconds question.
Yeah,
wrong.
Yeah. No. What if that stupidity is hereditary, Gareth? What am I going to do with, like, now we're going to make children and add more idiots to the world? I think we've got enough.
Ah, man. You know, mm-mm. part of it is also big match temperament. And this is something that made me think of the Proteas this weekend. Because if you're playing 30 seconds and someone in the comments said you psych someone out, right?
Mm-hmm.
You make them nervous. Mm. You've only got 10 seconds left. That kind of thing. It ruins people's ability to think clearly. Their emotion comes into it. They no longer know the answer. They're like overwhelmed and then they lose.
Yeah.
It's very easy to throw some people off. They don't have big match temperaments. I mean, that's the problem with the Proteas, right?
Yeah. Biggest problem with the Proteas.
Percy says it's an IQ and communications test. Mm. Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, actually, 30 seconds isn't necessarily about how much you know, but about how quickly you can explain something.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes the answer is a complicated, difficult thing that might require a lot of associations, but you can explain it with like charades laws.
Yeah.
You know, two syllables,
mm-hmm.
da, da, and then people get it quickly.
But the thing is, it's it's a combination of both things, Gareth. It's about what you know and how well you can explain it to someone else. Because for argument's sake...
And if you've got a connection with that other person, it's so much easier.
It's so much easier,
because they can like read your mind,
right.
So you've got a much better chance
like,
of winning.
You need some sort of general knowledge in order for you to make it through that game. That's why I'm saying I place a lot of stock on how well a person plays 30 seconds, because it tells me if you are informed about the world around you, if you have BMT,
yeah,
if you if shit hits the fan,
yeah,
can I count on you or not? Those are the kind of things that I look out for when we play these kind of games. I taught my friends how to play Texas Hold'em poker some time back. And that's where you learn if you can do, you know, for the like crimes with someone. It's like, okay, can you, can I trust you to keep a straight face? Are you stoic or not? Are you one of those people who gets a little reward and you can't wait to tell the world about it? You get what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
There's these tiny little things that you pick up about people when you play these games. So
I do agree. It's not just a game.
No.
There's a lot that's given away in these things. Gift Dichole says, you guys must try Catan, Settlers of Catan. I watched some people play this earlier this year. So I still don't know exactly how it works, but it's about resources and like, you know, there's a map and you get cards. And then you have to trade cards and you get resources and you have to trade resources. And that sounds like a quite clever game too. I can't say I know exactly how it works, but yeah, I'm sure there's a strategy involved there too.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same with PC games or games on a PlayStation or an Xbox or whatever. Some of them are so intricate and involved and complicated that it does reveal a lot about the people who are playing them. If you watch them play, and there are some people who develop incredibly good strategic impulses and instincts as a result of playing these games. There's a game that, again, my sister's boyfriend introduced me to years ago. It's like 2-3 years ago. But I remember I played it for a while until eventually it just stopped updating. It was called Crusader Kings on a laptop. But it was so intricate, so involved. You had like diplomacy, war, marrying your family off to the right families.
Oh my word.
It's dynastic. It's strategic. It's really, really complicated game.
Yeah.
And for a while, I can honestly say I thoroughly enjoyed it because it appealed to me. It has like a history component to it too. And there's so many things you can do there. There's intrigue and there's battle and there's who can you trust and which people should you appoint to your council and that kind of thing. And I mean, I pretty much got the game waxed within a couple of weeks and then lost interest. But for a while, it was really good. And I'm no strategic genius. Most people who meet me will tell you this guy's not the smartest guy at that stuff in particular.
Yeah.
But it wasn't hard to do and I got into it big time for a little while and then very quickly moved on. But I've never really been a gamer in that respect. So
the one game that really appealed to me for a while, but this was years ago, was Hitman. I loved Hitman. Oh, yeah. I loved Hitman. And because after every mission, you'd be given a ranking like Raging Psychopath or like Silent Assassin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I always aimed for Silent Assassin. You needed to move in the shadows, do the job and get out. Without anyone, you know, being any wiser to your movements.
Right.
But as usual, Hollywood stepped in and made a movie about it and screwed up everything.
Damn it. Carl says, the person you're playing with counts the most. If it's someone you know well, I got Paris because I said to a mate, capital of Italy, he responded with Paris and we won. So you have to know like how smart the person is that you're dealing with, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Has anyone ever played World of Warcraft or Dota? What's Dota?
I don't know what Dota is. World of Warcraft, I do know of. But yeah, I'm not too attracted to gamers. I haven't been a massive gamer in a very long time. Like, for whatever reason, I just dropped the habit.
My mom still plays solitaire with real cards, says Tracy. That's great. Cool. Good.
That is so cool.
Candy Crush cults, says Raven. Yeah, that's a thing.
I don't understand why that game is so attractive to women. And I say women.
What, Candy Crush?
Candy Crush. And I say specifically women because I've never seen a man get lost in that game.
I've never played it, eh?
It is the weirdest thing. Like, I mean, Ladies, please explain to me what it is about Candy
game,
Crush.
Why would that game especially appeal to women? That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I don't maybe,
I mean,
get
there are probably guys who like it, but they'll be the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any guys who play Candy Crush.
I've never met a man who plays Candy Crush.
I wonder what the answer is there. All right. Well, we don't have time for all of that. We need to keep moving. We've got a lot to do on the show this morning. Now, we've talked about Big Pharma, right? Mm-hmm. And we've talked about big industries like Big Tobacco and Big Liquor and all that stuff. And I think that one of the things people are most worried about is Big Food. And we've kind of touched on this once or twice before, especially when it comes to like fast food, genetically modified foods, all this kind of thing. I think people are very interested in the quality of the stuff they consume. And it's really hard and it's expensive to know that what you're eating is actually good for you.
Yeah.
I mean, we were joking with Achi earlier about like MSG, monosodium glutamate, in the food. But I think we've got to consider these things.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. What you put in, you'll get out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk to someone called Simphiwe Masilo, who is an activist and Youth Action Plan project lead. He's online, going to join us this morning to talk about people, young people especially, who are demanding immediate action to prevent their health and their future from the deceptive practices of big food. So it's their advertising. It's their lying to you about what's inside the packaging. Big food is under scrutiny for potentially misleading customers about the healthiness of their products. This issue is particularly urgent for children who are increasingly suffering from obesity and health-related issues. Globally, over 220 million children aged 5 to 18 are obese. Yeah. 220 million fat children, with South Africa seeing 1 in 5 children under 13 affected. That is twice the global average just here in South Africa. Raises serious concerns about the influence of big food on our diets. So, Simphiwe, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thanks. How are you?
Oh, it's Thank a Simphiwe Simphiwe. So, I thought it was a guy Simphiwe. It's a girl Simphiwe.
It's a girl Simphiwe.
Nice to see you, Simphiwe. How are you?
Nice to see you too. How are you doing?
Good. So, I read that intro about like how many kids in this country are obese and they're not even 13. Years old. That's scary. That's a very, very scary statistic.
Mm-hmm.
Is it big food's fault though, or is it their parents and their fault?
Big foods plays a large role in what's happening, specifically in how big foods are marketed. So something simple as your breakfast cereals has your bright colors and they tell you that it's nutritional for children, that children are going to get the go and that they're going to get the energy that they need. And what are parents going to do? They're going to buy exactly that because that's what they're being told.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I completely agree with you that advertising and marketing and things like bright colors and beautiful packaging and cartoon characters and stuff that they see on TV that's all linked to what they're eating there, that's like a trap. I do get it.
Yeah.
And I do think that that stuff needs to be fought. But at the same time, you know, fast food's easy. A lot of people want to go for the fast food, but we all know deep down inside it's not good for us.
True, fast food is easy and it's easily accessible, especially when you're in areas that are a lot more impoverished than your wealthier areas in South Africa. However, it doesn't take away from the fact that it is still unhealthy. And it's not even that people don't know that it's unhealthy. It's also mostly how it's marketed to us. Yesterday, for example, I was on SAFM and a friend of mine was taking a recording of that video. Right above the recording of while I was speaking, it was literally a advertisement of a fast food franchise.
Oh, yeah.
So having these things in your faces where on the other side of it, that advertisement could have been for fruits and veg, but it wasn't.
Okay, so let's just talk about big food. Like, who are the companies that you're most worried about here? Because a lot of the big food companies are actually owned by massive multinational corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a couple of them. There are probably about six or seven companies in the world that control almost all the processing of food and the marketing of food and the packaging of food. And they're the guys who actually control the supply lines. They know what the ingredients are in all of these things. And they're the ones who sell them to us at the end, right? So there are a couple of companies that are in charge of everything. It's not a conspiracy.
No, it's definitely not a conspiracy. I mean, our biggest stakeholders that we're trying to target right now, aside from the companies, is government themselves. So the Department of Health of South Africa is sitting on a regulation. It's called the R3337 Front of Package Food Regulation. And essentially what this regulation does is exactly what cigarette company regulation does, where it demands these big food companies on the front of their package for food to actually state that, hey, this is unhealthy. This black triangle means that it doesn't have the nutritional value that we claim it does. Mm. Once that regulation is passed.
She's frozen.
She's frozen.
James, I think she's frozen.
Mm.
Let's see if we can get her back. It was the other. I think she's back. Simpiwe?
Hi, I'm back.
Sorry, we lost you for a second there. It was big food. They tried to cut you off.
Yeah.
That's the conspiracy of the morning.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were saying there's this regulation that they're trying to bring in, the R3337?
Yes, it's the R3337 front of package draft regulation. So last year, 2023, government opened it up for commentary, and since then it's just been sitting and it hasn't been passed at all. So as part of the Fix My Food organization, which is a conglomerate of Fix My Foods from all over the world that have been started by UNICEF, but specifically in South Africa, our main focus is to try and get government to pass this regulation, because then it essentially says to big food companies that you can't lie anymore. So on the front of each and every single product that you produce, you actually need to tell people what's on there in bold letters. You need to put a little black triangle that says, hey, this is not as healthy as we claimed it to be.
Okay, no. I totally agree with you about a lot of these things, but I'm also very concerned, like the WHO and you said UNICEF just now. I mean, these are just big government, and big government in collusion with big food is probably the most dangerous thing that could ever happen to us. I also think like regulations aren't necessarily going to change behavior. If you look at smoking, for example,
that was the example they put all thinking of.
Right? They put all that stuff on the front of cigarette boxes. It didn't stop anybody from smoking. And I wonder how many people already know that some of this stuff is bad for you, but they like it, so they're going to keep eating it.
Mm. So I did an YouTube episode with Chu on this that's organized by healer.org, and people can go find that series on healer.org.
Yeah. Tell us what was in it.
Big food.
Oh, she's food. Definitely got big food trying to hack her while she's talking to us here.
It's bad. It's bad.
I mean, I wonder why anybody, you know, wants to go after the food packaging when they should go after the people who are
making the food.
And also, if the food packaging is all going to look horrible with just lists of ingredients on it, I don't know how many people are going to be buying it.
Hey, man. I mean,
it's the shelves will look horrific. It looked like Russia.
Yeah, I'm just saying. People need to take accountability as well.
Yeah.
Look, though, the cigarettes is a perfect example. It writes there on the box.
Mm.
Smoking will is kill bad you. For your health.
It says will kill you.
It'll kill you. It'll do this to your heart.
They
it'll
show like lungs that have been.
But people still smoke.
Yeah. So I don't know about this packaging thing. Are you sure this is the way to go?
Definitely. I mean, with smoking, for example, number one, there's been a large decrease in the amount of people that do smoke because of it. Number two, cigarettes can't actually be marketed on TV due to the regulations. So if we, at the start, try and regulate how the big food companies are marketed, I mean, at the moment, just driving from one place to another place in any spot in Gauteng, you have big billboards that are flooding you with these marketing tactics on social media, just scrolling, and you just see these marketing tactics. So trying to regulate how that works, and also trying to inform people with these regulations on how that works. South Africa has a high literacy rate. So a lot of people aren't necessarily concerned with informing themselves around these marketing. So by having regulations that assist with informing them, definitely does help.
Simpiwe, I'm really annoyed by and surprised by the fact that these big multinational organizations like the WHO and others are trying to make us eat insects. And I saw an article this morning about how cockroach milk is better for you than cow milk, for example. I mean, they really are trying to get us to eat disgusting things too, on the pretext that it's healthy for us. But frankly, I would rather eat chocolate every day of my life than have one single cup of cockroach milk, even if it's supposedly healthy for me. Something's going to kill me. May as well be something that tastes nice.
Mm-hmm. No one's saying you have to. Don't eat cockroaches. Eat an apple if you must. However, be aware of the fact that the chocolate that you would rather eat over the cockroach isn't nutritional for you. Be aware of the fact that when it is marketed to you, it is marketed in a way that forces you to think that you need this and it is in your face, and that while for you as a grown adult who has a higher literacy rate, who knows what's actually inside the food that they're eating, a child who's 6 years old doesn't have the same information. And yeah, furthermore,
parents, hang on, that's the parents' job. You made the child. Why should the rest of us in society have to have boring packaging on our food because your parents didn't do a good job, didn't tell you you shouldn't just eat sugar, you little shit?
And let's be honest, like you do not wake up obese. No one goes to sleep one night and then wake up overweight the very next morning. Like, it's a process. Stupid. So I think what I would suggest perhaps is changing the culture in this country. Like, you know this, Impiwe, most probably better than Gareth would. But like, you know, when a African woman is well rounded around the hips, we think that is great. But there are a lot of health implications that come with that. So perhaps we need to be looking at the culture rather than just putting labels on food.
That's part of changing the culture. I mean, once upon a time, anyone could smoke a cigarette at any place. You could get onto an airplane, you could smoke a cigarette. Right this very moment, if I know in my family, if a female is seen smoking, then it's all of a sudden this bad taboo thing. But way back when, smoking indoors was part of the culture. This is part of changing the cultures. It's part of the process of changing the cultures. If we don't start at one singular point, then we're never going to start at any other point.
Yeah, listen, I'm on your side with, they must start telling the truth on packaging, right? And this is a big part of what you're an activist for, am I right? That this is really, really integral, that they've got to tell us what's in there. Like, tell us what the harmful ingredients are. Tell us what the chemicals are that you use. Tell us where it's grown. Tell us what kinds of genetic enhancements you're making. Like, people need to be able to at least see what's going on inside that packet so that they can make an informed choice.
Yes, and I mean, we're not saying that you have to write out absolutely everything, but something as simple as color coding, like a black triangle, so that people know that if they see a black triangle on the front of a package, that this is unhealthy for them. We're still in South Africa at the end of the day, where if it's already on the back and people aren't reading it on the back, they're definitely not going to read it on the front. By teaching them these small symbols that if it's red, you should be more on the cautious side. If it's green, then it's a go.
Okay. What about these constant movements we see all over the world to try and get people to stop eating meat? You're not one of those people, are you? You're not trying to make us all vegan.
I am not trying to make anyone vegan. I myself definitely am a vegetarian, but you do what pleases you. That is none of my business. I'm just here to tell big food companies to stop lying to us and to tell governments to pass that regulation.
Okay. Well, then we've probably got more in common than we have to disagree about.
Yeah, definitely.
But why do you think there is a link between poverty and bad food choices? And is it entirely about education? Because I don't know that so many people are, that it isn't obvious to them that a greasy piece of chicken that's been dipped in oil from some fast food joint, surely even a six-year-old knows that's, it may taste nice. We all know it tastes nice.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. But surely along the way, someone is going to click the, hey, hang on, eating this is probably not good for me and having a salad is?
Accessibility. I mean, yes, definitely. People do know that eating greasy food isn't healthy, and people do have that connection. But if you're living in an area where the nearest form of food that you can get is the fast food franchise, and simple example, you live in Alex, you work a two-hour taxi drive away from your household and you still need to take that two-hour taxi drive back home. The nearest place to you is your nearest fast food franchise where the fruit and veg that is close to you is kilometers away, if not further. And on top of that, it's a lot more expensive. So it's easier.
that would make sense, but I'm not talking about townships. I'm talking about rural South Africa, where actually the fast food places are quite far away, mm-hmm. and people are still fat.
The one with the rural areas actually is very interesting to me, where it's in terms of how it's marketed on social media. So on social media, what you'll find, especially with a lot of girls in the rural areas, is that they use fast food franchise to lure them into this lavish lifestyle. So you'll find a little 16-year-old girl from rural area, her boyfriend comes with the car and says, hey, let me buy you this burger. Let me buy you this chips. Let me buy you this pizza. And now amongst the girls, you are it, because everyone knows that the nearest fast food franchise is how far away, which means that your boyfriend had to go and drive all the way there, which makes you the fancy person. And it becomes part of the sort of luxurious lifestyle that you need to live.
But then it is a treat. So it's not happening all the time. Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't make you fat. I mean, if you have greasy chicken once a week, you're not going to balloon. And these are supposedly people who live in rural areas who grow a lot of their own food, and yet they're enormous. I mean, it might be the eating habits rather than the marketing or social media.
No, the eating habits definitely are a part of it. Social media is also a part of it. But with also the eating habits of it all, what you'll also find very interesting is that with food companies, they won't tell you that after a certain amount of portions that you have, the food no longer becomes nutritious. So now when you're in a rural area and you don't know that information, you're going to have more and more of it without knowing that after the certain amount of portion, I'm no longer having any nutritional benefits.
They say they make the food addictive, says Tato. That could be a part of it too. We know that there is a chemical reaction that happens that gives people a feeling like that luxury thing that you were just talking about just now. Tastes so nice, smells so good, can't get enough of that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's easy, right? It's like you order and then 2 minutes later, it's right there. You didn't have to cook it. You didn't have to go and dig it up out of the ground. You didn't have to clean it. All that stuff. Mm. Somebody says here in the comments, and I'd like your thoughts on this. Wendy says, shop the perimeter of a store. The whole food that looks like actual food. If it comes from a box or a tin, check the label. What do you think of that?
I think that she's absolutely correct. So even in the way that grocery shops are set up, is purposefully done so that people are buying the processed and unhealthy foods. When you walk into a grocery shop, at the till, it's usually just sweets as you're walking out.
Yeah.
The lighting of it, how things are placed out, your bread is usually at the back of the grocery shop, and your fresh meat is also usually at the back of the grocery shop. That's all done on purpose.
But then they've also lied to us, all these organizations that supposedly had our best interests at heart. They told us butter was bad. Then they told us margarine was bad. Then they told us butter was good. They also said to us there was a food pyramid. Do you remember the food pyramid?
Mm-hmm.
We were all taught this shit at school. Turns out it's complete nonsense. Turns out you don't need the carbohydrates. That was part of what the cereal companies were doing to market to us. So we've been lied to, and now we're a little bit skeptical.
So that's also one of the other reasons why we're trying to push for government to take control of this, because at the moment, big food companies have been just running amok with whatever that they want to do. I mean, you have countries such as Mexico that has strengthened up their regulations. Countries also such as Vietnam as well have also strengthened their regulations around food companies. Seems like South Africa is the one that's left behind and allowing big food companies to just run amok, where we have the highest obesity rates amongst children under the age of 13 globally.
You know, I don't know. I feel like I'm still stuck on the idea that if we do not correct the behavior, even if we label things, and as you're suggesting, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't, by the way, I think it's important that all of us are informed as much as we possibly can. But I think at the end of the day, as long as we do not change our eating routines, our habits, no matter what you put on that label, people are still going to be fat. Like there is, in my mind, there's absolutely no reason for someone under the age of 13 to be obese. You should be out there running, jumping, and your parents should be parenting you. Like, I don't know. I'm just stuck on the idea that you have to change the culture over and above just putting labels on food.
Let me ask you, if you could ban any three things that you think would immediately help, what would they be? If you could actually get the government to ban three things, what would they be?
Top three things that I'd probably ban would be tuna noodles.
I'm with you. I hate those things.
Tuna noodles, energy bars, and what would be the third thing I'd ban? Anything Nestle.
Anything Nestle.
Wow.
The whole company.
Whole company.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, we got moaning from the producers, but they're fat, so don't worry about them. Wow. Yeah. Sodas. I mean, like, Christian makes a good point. Sodas, that would be a good thing to ban. I think that that's probably responsible. If you think about how much sugar is in a can of soda of whatever kind, I mean, that's just frightening, right? Energy drinks, says Tracy. That's another one.
Yeah, we should get
energy drinks. So we had we did a workshop where with UNICEF and Chew on This, as well as a UK company called Bite Back. And they did little experiments just asking us how much sugar do we think is in particular energy drinks, juices, and soda drinks. Yeah. And then having us take teaspoons out into a cup and literally pouring out all the way up until they said stop, and showing us that this is the amount of sugar that is in your energy drinks, your soda drinks, and even your juices. And they're not telling you this. And especially with your energy drinks and your juices, marketing it in a way that energy drinks will give you the go. Your juices are super healthy for you.
Somebody says here you should ban sugar, just generally sugar. South Africans eat a lot of sugar though, hey? That's a big part of our diet in this country, and that's part of our problem.
No, definitely. It is a huge part of our problem. I wouldn't necessarily say ban sugar, because I mean, you get good sugars such as in your fruits. Fruits naturally have sugars in them. However, I would go back to decreasing how we eat our sugar. So going back to what you're saying about changing the culture of how we see things.
Tracy says, I don't trust a company that makes cat food, baby formula, chocolate, cereals, coffee, and bottles water. Specialize in one. You can't have all of them.
Yeah, that is so true.
And Vilmix says, corn syrup. Corn syrup is apparently very bad too. So yeah, wow. There's a lot to think about here.
Yeah, there is a lot to unpack with it. And I mean, as young people, we're at the forefront of trying to make these changes. We're part of the next generation that is changing the culture. So the culture is changing with us. And hopefully by the time we have our kids, it would have definitely changed how we eat and how we see food in the country.
Let me ask you a personal question, because this comes up for me all the time. I'm very rude about fat people because I think that they are they take up too much space and they break things and they're unattractive because they're so fat. And as a result, I'm not allowed to get fat. So I have to, I mean, I look in the mirror sometimes and I think you better go to gym for extra long today and you better not eat for the next 3 days. And yeah, so far I'm holding up. But if I get fat, the fat people will come after me. If you talk about this slowly. Stuff, are you worried about the fat people turning on you?
No, I'm not.
Because, I mean, there are a lot of them and they're very big.
I'm not worried about that.
And when they're hungry, they get that look in their eye. And I'm telling you, it's tickets.
No, it's not something I'm worried about.
Promise?
I promise it is not something I'm worried about.
All right, no, well, tell us.
As long as you can run, Simpiwe, you'll be
fine. Yeah. Simpiwe, just run.
Run.
Simpiwe, what are we having for breakfast this morning? What is a good thing to have for breakfast this morning? Come on, help us here.
Good thing to have for breakfast this morning, some toast. Well, personally, I'm going to have some toast, egg, a bit of avocado.
Nice.
If you do need something for that's on the go, the making jungle oats from actual scratch can also do that. That's a good breakfast to have. Some yogurt, plain yogurt with some fruits. Fruits is always a good go to have for breakfast.
All right. And it is more expensive to eat healthy. Is that just the price that you have to pay? It's like if you want to live in a nice house, you have to be able to afford the bond and the municipal rates and taxes. And if you want to have a nice car, you got to be making enough money. Is that just how it is? Like, it's just richer you are, the better you'll eat.
At the moment, that's how it is. And we're trying to change that, but in South Africa, because it shouldn't be like that. I mean, having your own substantiated farming isn't that expensive. Trying to buy from your local fruit and veggie vendors that are at your taxi rank isn't really that expensive. But people obviously want to buy from certain markets that price it at a higher price, not knowing that they can get it from that vendor that's sitting right there. Support local.
Well, also, I mean, you're going to have toast this morning for breakfast, but the bread cartel, do you remember when they had to break the bread cartel not so long ago? Do you remember that? It's crazy. Yeah. Colluding to fix prices so that ordinary South Africans pay more for bread. Mm-hmm. Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Telling you. All right. There we go. Thank you very much. I'm really, really happy to have you on the show. Keep doing the good work you're doing. Help so many people to figure out what the hell's going on in their food, because it's scary.
Yes, Impu, let's cut the
fat. Thank you so much.
Very nice.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Look at what producer James is having for breakfast, an energy drink. Okay, just go sit down there. Yeah.
Come.
Oh, this was unintentional.
Go on.
You're essentially having a cup of sugar. That's what you're having, a can of sugar.
Is the consensus that a Red Bull is not good for breakfast?
Yes.
Red Bull is not good for anything.
Damn it. I don't know. I mean, if you need wings or
exactly.
Or if you're James and you're surviving on like an hour of sleep.
There you go.
Look, he's going to die young anyway. You can't save him, Simpiwe.
He's a lost cause.
He could live a little longer if you put the Red Bull down and got some proper rest.
It's quality, not quantity. He's got a horrible life.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I'm all about vibes.
All about vibes, guys. The vibes need to change a bit. We need to shift around how the vibes look.
All right. Well, Simpiwe looks healthier than you, James, but that's probably because she's eating right. Thank you, Simpiwe. And give your organization a plug so people can go and find out more. They can get some info from you.
Yes, definitely. It's healer.org. So HEALA.org. The episode is true on this episode 2. There's also a petition there that we're asking people to sign as well. For the other organizations I'm a part of, it is Fix My Food South Africa, which is part of UNICEF. And then I'm also part of the South African Institute of International Affairs as the project lead for the South African Youth Gender Action Plan.
Awesome. Very good. Great nice stuff. To have you on the show.
Great.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, very good. Nice to have you too. You know, normally I'm very anti-activist. When someone calls themselves an activist, I'm like, ugh, oh, please. But she was quite cool.
She was.
She made some good points. I don't trust anybody. I don't trust these NGOs either.
No, you know what? Any person that can...
You know what? I trust my taste buds.
That's it. Any person that can spend 30 minutes talking to the two of us and not pull their hair out, they deserve genuine.
Good point.
They deserve
good point. Well put.
Kudos. Mm-hmm.
I am hungry as hell after that conversation, aren't you?
I'm starving. Do you know what I feel like having, Gareth?
What?
Like a massive buffet-style breakfast where I can select whatever.
And bacon.
Sausage.
Eggs.
Bacon. Cheese.
Yeah.
Like all of it. Just put it all together.
Mm.
Oh, and I over the weekend, it's so weird. Over the weekend, I was pigging out, man. This Were past you? Weekend, woo,
funny, I had a funny lot of thing food. With me is like I normally don't eat breakfast. I'll start eating at lunchtime.
Yeah.
But now after this conversation, I'm so goddamn hungry.
Yeah, we need some breakfast.
I think I'm gonna just have a black coffee and be quiet.
No, James, I think you should sponsor breakfast this morning. I like that idea.
Mm-mm. Very bad idea. Very bad idea. Okay, so just one last thing. Very important.
Mm.
That Dutch guy.
Yes, we have to do it.
This is have a day. Have just one day. Like this guy's whole life seems like it is.
Yes.
Just fun.
Make the decision.
In Envarumland, here op vakantie, he says, bakke in de zon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Here he is. This is just terrific. And we will be back on Friday, bright and early at 6 a.m. Don't miss it and keep warm.